This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me to discuss a turnaround in fortune against the Saints, Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome to the show.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Hello.
Hello. I'm doing all right. It's becoming regular now. It's becoming different. It's like we're wearing new shoes now. Regular wins, expectations of wins, able to just turn up in other teams' backyards and decide we
get
want the 3 points
done.
And walk away with those 3 points. Once upon a time, not so long ago, we'd gone 9 games without a win against Southampton. Now I believe we've won 3 of the last 4, if I'm not mistaken. And that run's going to continue, let me tell you now, listeners.
Well, we've won the last 3.
How are you, chaps? What have you been up
very
to?
Well.
Last correspondence from Phil Shaw, he was in a jacuzzi, which... There's no wonder they nickname, well, I
managed
nickname.
To send us a beautiful picture of a wonderful landscape and still managed to send it with a restricted view.
Yes.
But more about this jacuzzi and the moniker of the UK.
Yes, we're a weekend away for the wife's birthday and it just happened to coincide with the Villa game, unfortunately. So I had to take my phone and earbuds to the jacuzzi and keep them dry and follow the match as best I can. You do get some strange looks when you take a mobile phone to a jacuzzi.
Yeah. See, no one could call you a fair weather supporter. You know, when you've got to watch that game, you get in that damn jacuzzi.
So what happened in the jacuzzi when Watkins' winner went in? Did you splash around?
No, the bubbles were doing everything for us.
Oh. Anything is exciting for you, Mr. Bud?
Nothing compared to that now. How do I top that? just cracking on with work. First gig of the year on Friday, which was cold.
Outdoors,
good.
Was it?
Nice to be back into the swing of things. You what, sorry?
Outdoors, was it?
Yeah, Terrace One. Luckily, I got moved indoors, thank God.
Anybody watch The Last of Us, which has started the show?
I did. Yes, I did. It's pretty good.
Is it? I mean, it's interesting because I saw all the greatest show ever, 5 out of 5, amazing, incredible, makes Walking Dead look like a pile of dog turd. The first episode of The Walking Dead I thought was a bit more exciting to create the world, and Fear of the Walking Dead's more of a closer, because that's like when it's kicking off. The contagion, or whatever you want to call it. Although this, The Last of Us, does jump, I don't want to do spoilers, but it kind of jumps 20 years.
Yes, it does. But I think the problem is most of the reviewers you'll see will probably have played the video games, and the storyline of them is pretty good. So I think they're sensing right. Where it's going to go.
They've probably had the first 2 or 3 episodes as well in advance to review off. Because the first one, you know, when I saw all this kind of hyperbole, I'm thinking, really? But I will watch the second one and then we'll adjourn in the next show to discuss if it's getting closer to the hyperbole. But I did not, for the record, play the game, so I am not emotionally invested in that world. So apologies for that. Right, onwards. We should start off with some news, as per usual. Shall we go for the news that the second man on the moon, Buzz Aldrin has married for the fourth time, aged 93. Or shall we have the villa news?
I'm sure he's over the moon, but let's go with the villa news.
Round of applause for that one, Mr. Bird. Very good. Right then, into the villa news we go. Right, first off, injury news. A few players came back for Southampton, obviously. One of them, the goal scorer. Thank God he was fit, because selling Ings would have been a bit of a foolish endeavour. Augustinsson is fit again, so I think he will...
Which is weird, because that injury looked horrendous, didn't it, at the time?
Yeah, so it really depends on Dean. But if Dean's going to be back for Leicester, then maybe Augustinsson will move on. Obviously, it was in Villa's interest to have him sticking around for... the Saints game, because Lucas Dean was sidelined. So expect an announcement of termination there in terms of his loan.
Extermination.
Dean and McGinn, they've been penciled in for Leicester. So hopefully that will happen. And of course, the long term one that we eagerly await, Diego Carlos, is around back on the grass, but he's not involved in teamwork at the moment. So that would suggest 4-6 weeks minimum, I would say.
Yeah, he'll have to get a couple of games under his belt, won't he, with 23s or whatever it's going to be.
In terms of transfer, Duran Duran, as we call him on this show. Dejon Duran, he's got a very long name.
He's got about five names, hasn't he?
Yeah. Is in. He came in before Ings went out. Meanwhile, Freddie Gilbert is out, and it looks like old Morgan Sanson is following him to Strasbourg. We've seen that Lequit has actually confirmed this. So Sanson is on loan for the rest of the season. Doesn't seem to be an option to buy deal, but Strasbourg will be paying a hearty chunk of his wages. The Guendouzi rumour seems to be gathering heat.
Yep. It looks like they've, Marseille have supposedly bought what could well be his replacement. So it might be that they're just getting their ducks in the row before they let Villa have one of their prize assets, which would be the logical thing for a team to do, Villa.
Yeah, you would think, wouldn't you? Buy in advance to replace the outgoing player. Just an idea.
Could they call it succession planning, as they call it in business?
Yeah, I think it is. We talked about Ings's leaving on the Something for the Weekend show, so check that out rather than duplicating what we're going to say. I did actually watch the majority of the Aston Villa women's team take a point off Manchester City. Could have easily won that game, to be fair. Probably 1-1 was a fair result at the end. Manchester City had a couple of good chances, but this is a different beast of Aston Villa women's team now. Nobbs and Staniforth have definitely taken us up another level. It allows Darley just to freely roam and force the issue, and she scored a good goal. But fifth place now, and listening to the manager's interview after, I think the club have set a target, and I think Clara, the manager, I think her target is above that, which is fifth. So I'm sure the club have set, like, I don't know, sixth, seventh, top half, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But promising signs there, and they're not bad to watch, actually, as well. Meanwhile, Aston Villa are out of the Youth Cup after a 4-1 defeat to Southampton. Chris Budd has already written them off and buried the youth team. So, any chance he's had, he's been just, if he's not hitting them with a crowbar, he's digging them a grave. It's
although, to be fair to him, Caden Young's come out of it with his first pro contract. So,
but there's a lot of room for improvement. But
much respect to Southampton. They were excellent.
And they do have a decent pedigree in terms of academy. And as just mentioned there by Chris, Caden Young gets his first pro contract and has featured on the bench recently. He's kind of quite powerful for his age.
He's more developed than everyone else. Yeah, that's what kind of makes him stand out, even at youth team level.
Yeah, he's like a mini Traore, isn't he? Not as well, you know, he's not applying baby oil and he's not as sculpted, but he's got that kind of, he can charge.
He reminds me, actually. Yeah, he reminds me a little bit more of a winger version of sort of like a Darius Vassell or someone like that.
Yeah.
He's quite stocky with it. He's not like really tall, but he's pretty developed. So you think he's the closest of the really young lads to kind of, you know, stepping up.
And his ascendancy has basically been under Emery's eyes as well.
Yeah.
Right. Before we go on, I just want to give a big shout out to the My Old Man Said members as per usual. I don't actually have the list of the new people who signed up in the last few days, but I will read you out in next week's show. But a big thank you for joining us. If you are annoyed by listening to ads on the podcast, this is the one surefire way of getting rid of them all and just having the purest experience of listening to the show. As well as ad-free shows, you also get extra shows, which in the next few days will include the Mad Few question and answer session for the month. And you get membership of Match Club, our exclusive private members club, which met for the Southampton game. It's good because it basically, you get to know everybody and it's kind of like watching games with family, is it not? But a good family, family that doesn't wind you up and piss you off. Maybe your family's better than mine, so I'm just speaking just from my own experience. But if you want to support the show, but also have a, let's say, a more enjoyable experience and extra shows and ad-free listening, please do go to myomansaid.com and click on the members link to get more details and join us there. And also, if you look on the bio of most of the social media of My Old Man Said, there will be a link to our link tree where you'll be able to get access to the Patreon to sign up there as well. Thank you very much. All right, let's get straight into this game, shall we? As I said at the top of the show, recent times we've reversed the 9 games without a win against Southampton. Unfortunately, Dean Smith met his demise. Probably the last time we got beat by Southampton, was it not?
Yes.
Yes.
But kind of since then, it's been a 3-point jolly, has it not?
Yep, since the days of crybaby Matt Target.
What was at stake here? Well, essentially, Saints were 3 wins back to back. Villa had a chance of winning 3 away games on the trot. Emery was 100% away from home, be it only over 2 games in the league. And also, there was this statistic that nobody has got more points than Villa since Emery's started. Not something you're that bothered about. There's also they were playing in the black and yellow third kit, which we've never won in. These are minor details. The main thing was to beat a team that looked like it had turned things around, but also to keep our momentum. Because the biggest thing for me was you can see the league table about to be split up in two because there's a gap forming. And Villa are in this situation where they got to decide which half of the league they want to finish in, really. And to win this would bridge the gap, put 4 points or so below us. And then if you beat Leicester, I think you're pretty much off to the races in terms of the top half. Although you got the small issue of having play Arsenal and Manchester City back to back. But you got to keep racking up the points if you want to get on. And so I think this and the Leicester game is pivotal in terms of making Villa a top half team. And certainly we can start looking upwards rather than, you know, just around us and below us. Because the season is still alive, is it not, if we win games like this? The reality of Villa is we've been dropping points against teams that are in the bottom 6. And that's really, over the last few seasons, compromised our progress. So that was another reason why this game was kind of psychologically important.
And I thought as well, because we had that little break having got out of the cup, you wanted to go into sort of a 2-week break, having put the points on the board against Leeds and Southampton, knowing that you can really knuckle down, do your business that you need to do in the, you know, towards the end of the window, and then, you know, really go into Leicester battle ready for the rest of the season. Yep.
In terms of the starting lineup, predictable, isn't it? I don't think many
it's
Villa
itself,
fans
didn't it really, because there's no one around.
Yeah, no Villa fans would have been surprised.
To be fair, it's pretty much our strongest team, though, on paper, you'd say. There's not too many who you'd sort of get rid of to put in, I wouldn't have said.
Well, you couldn't, really. I mean, when you look on the bench, that was the clue, wasn't it? It was like, oh, well, it has to be these guys, really. I don't think nobody's making the argument for Coutinho over Buendia anymore. I mean, you could tell that when Buendia got substituted in the second half for Coutinho, he was a bit pissed off, wasn't he?
He was
thinking those days are going to be over.
Yeah, well, the only other one that you talked about in some for the weekend is Young in front of Cash. Cash is back and ready, but you wouldn't pick him over Ashley Young at the minute.
Young's been one of our best players, like, period.
Yeah, ever since that Manchester City game at Villa Park, where if it was anybody who embodied, you know, how we and why we got the draw there, it was Ashley Young. And, you know, we said it on the show then. It's like you can't see Cash playing above Young at the moment. There's just overall no way. So it's an interesting one. I don't know how much I look into this speculation about Cash potentially moving on. that only happens if Emery's actually bringing in another right back, because Ashley Young's not going to, he's not a long term, is he? He's 37. No. He's not going to play forever. So either Cash is considered good enough for what Emery envisages in the future, or if he gets moved on, probably the reason would be Emery in that respect.
I don't think it's because a bigger team comes in, with the greatest respect to him right now.
Yeah. First half, is it 72% possession Villa had? Did it feel like that to you?
We were in control. Yeah, we pretty much did everything bar score. And obviously, they had the ball in the net, didn't they? Well, it was offside. Well, both of them were offside. But other than that, Villa just commanded the ball. It was really good to see us actually playing with a little bit of verve at times. And some of the interplay sort of in the final third was great to see that they've obviously been sort of working on that. We've been a little bit critical of that recently. But I thought they did well.
First 20 minutes, I was thinking, yeah, this could be nil-nil. One of them. But then what you just talked about, there was a bit of zip in the interplay coming up towards, let's say, the second third of the first half. And you thought, hey, actually, I think we can do something here, because the way they were playing, it wasn't kind of token gesture stuff. It was at speed.
No, not at all.
And they were carving up opportunities. I mean, some of the finishing, let's say, not quite there yet, but...
And they weren't like real huge chances. I mean, you know, I think it's a Ramsey shot. The keeper makes the save that he should make. Bailey kind of smashes the rebound into Rosette, but which can happen. I was really pleased
to see. What do you mean
it
can happen? It does happen.
Well, can and does.
Trademark.
Yeah, true. I'm being generous to him. I was really pleased to see again after Leeds how much Moreno was getting involved. He was the outball. He was the overlap. He was getting involved. He was driving us up the pitch. Admittedly, I think that was because Southampton were probably letting him, which they didn't in the second half. I think our fullbacks got involved a lot more in the first half. But I thought he had a really good half offensively. I thought the midfield three looked really tidy.
I thought Southampton were doing pretty well at closing down spaces and, you know, defending in a couple of banks. And
they were organised, to be fair.
Pretty tight and organised. It wasn't like, you know, remember that time they came to Villa Park and were open and we just cut them apart like ribbons.
They were 4-0 down. 4-0. 3-0 down at half time, yeah.
So Nathan Jones of Bananarama fame has kind of got them organised, and he's now playing a 4-2-3-1. And he saw Ward-Prowse, as predicted, as we were saying in the something for the weekend, that has been the main change, is this 4-2-3-1 and Prowse playing further forward behind the forward in a kind of a 10 role. And that's, we actually said that actually he's done our kind of homework for us. And just by playing as we naturally do, that is, we are nullifying what we would always consider their main threat, because he'd be in the Kamara zone there. And
he didn't get a sniff first half, did he? He didn't
That's where I want him. Yeah.
Exactly, because he's noticeably their best player. I think Ward-Prowse is a very good player. I mean,
everything goes through him, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if Villa could have got him that time, obviously you would have taken him. But like you said, you didn't see a lot of Kamara either, because the two of them sort of like nullified each other. That was Kamara's role. You did see a lot more of Douglas Luiz in this game. I mean, he was almost taking the piss, Douglas Luiz, with some of the passing that he was doing in this game. There was a lot of the flicks and things that he normally does, but they were hitting home. They were going to the right place. And like I said, I think he created more chances than anyone else in the game, including, I think he had a couple for himself he should have done better with, especially one that he had in his left.
Mm-hmm. And obviously he got the assist for the goal in the second half.
I think he's got an understanding going with Kamara now. I mean, Kamara sort of took the plaudits against Leeds, I think, in this game, because Kamara was, you know, Shepherd and Ward-Prowse for most of the game. It was Luiz who had a bit of freedom, and there was like no Southampton counterpart to sort of like sit in Luiz. He had a bit of freedom to roam and try and link up with Wendy and the other ones, just to sort of like link the attacks.
And I think he always flourishes, Luiz, or players like that as well. When you don't have someone right on top of you, you've kind of got a little bit of time to look up and pick your pass. And he was sort of popping it around across the field. He was switching the play a little bit.
It helps when your opposition's got a striker who has never scored against Villa. And I think it was 13 games before this one. Shea Adams, obviously the ex-Blues boy.
You saw the offside goal in the first half, the mess he made of that. I mean, he was offside as well for the first, but to trip over it, and then Martinez didn't know what to do, because he doesn't expect a striker 6 yards out to trip over the ball. And then that's how... was Walker Peters put it in after
Walker
that?
Yeah, Walker Peters taps it in, doesn't he?
I mean, to be fair to him, Shea Adams has done all right, hasn't he? When he's been at Southampton, in terms of better than you probably expected, but can't see him ever scoring against Villa.
Well, not if they go down.
Well, there you go. It's the basis of my judgment. Mention Moreno. Do you think Emery would look, we're just mentioning the Cash Young situation, do you think Emery would look at somebody in a similar profile to play on the right-hand side?
Long term, yes. Maybe not yet. I think Ashley Young is actually both the player and the personality we need there right now.
Yeah,
I think because he's definitely defensively he's better than Moreno and Cash. Attacking wise, I think he's more consistent than Cash in terms of his delivery. But Cash gives you more dynamism, but Young is in such good physical shape that you can easily play him every week. And the big thing is, I just think his personality, his sort of leadership, leading by example, and all that sort of stuff, the more intangible things that aren't in the stats, you need to play him at the moment. I think he helps the communication with the back four. I think he probably makes Konsa better, Mings better. I think Martinez is probably even calmer with him there. I think he's probably the one who was shouting at Luiz and Kamara in front. He's like your sort of, you know, if Martinez is your captain by armband, Young is the guy who sort of leads by example and is the vocal one who, I've used the word conduit quite a few times in the last year with him, where he's the link between the management and the players, which you do need.
I remember last season when certain numpties were, let's say, undermining him. And I think he played midfield at one stage. I think he came on and he set up, what game did he set up a goal when he came on in midfield?
The Brighton one. Jared's first game, he came on, set up Watkins.
He had a great run, didn't he, from like left back position right through, and he fed
And
Watkins,
I think that was the moment where he just shut up all the numpties who were just going, oh, too old, you know, he's past it. You know, basically lazy parroting. That said, Young has surprised pretty much us all, I would say, with this season's contribution.
And I'm really pleased for him, because whatever he goes on to do post-Villa, which I think he'll get another year personally.
Oh.
Because normally with players, you'd always say, don't go back, don't go back. And Villa have a history of a couple of people doing that, and you just return and it's dreadful. You know, and you look at Ronaldo at United as a modern example.
Gordon Cowan still now go down. That was all right.
Much later in his career, wasn't it? Was it sort of 93, 94? Well, he came back
three times or twice.
Yeah.
And second time was good, because that was when he got us promoted and he was in a decent team with Platt then.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, sorry, we digress.
Young will now, he probably wouldn't have before, but he definitely will now. He will go down as a bona fide Villa legend, which I think is really good. Even though he hasn't won a trophy or anything, I think the fact that he's come back and done such a good job, his stock's kind of gone back up with the fan base. He's a real fan favourite again.
A different player came back. It's like, that's the thing that I really noticed about Young. I mean, you know, the slight tricky winger went to United and went on to great things, but what you got back was like this battle-hardened sort of utility man.
Wise man. Like an elite level shit house. Yeah.
Yes.
Some fans were maybe disappointed when he came back thinking, oh, you know, we're not getting the player that left. But it's kind of like, no, we're paying him for the player he is now, which is to sort of paraphrase a line from Moneyball. Villa bought him in to do what he is now, and he's a solid right back, but he's also a utility man, a great pro. Physically, he probably can still go toe-to-toe with any of them doing a bleep test, I'm sure.
And he's got so many assets that these stats boys can't quantify, because it's got
nothing to
do with
stats, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's great. And I think he's been the difference in a lot of games, even without us knowing.
Well, against Manchester City, that was the first bona fide example. Suddenly, as a crowd at the ground, you thought, well, actually, let's all channel the spirit of Young here. After he poleaxed De Bruyne, you just thought, well, we might get something out of this game.
And I love the reaction against Leeds when he absolutely flattened their nippy little fucker on the wing, didn't he? Absolutely poleaxed him into the Doug Ellis that was greeted like a goal. And I like that about him. He gives us an aggression that we didn't have last year.
Him and Martinez are two guys I feel for when Villa get knocked out of these cups early doors, because you're thinking, if we're going to win a cup, it just helps rubber stamp their efforts, especially this season. Mm-hmm. And what you're saying about Young never won anything at Villa. He and Martinez, probably more so than any of the other starting 11, it would mean more to win a trophy with Villa.
Yep.
Than any of them, really.
Yeah, but I bet despite all the things Young has seen in his career, he's never been hauled off the pitch because of somebody flying a drone over his head during the game.
Yeah, good segue. Yeah, that was a bizarre one. I always remember reading about this protocol, about if there's a drone, game's off, lads. And you just think, well, why, and will it ever happen? And there it was. Have we got to the bottom of this? Do we know whose drone it was? People have accused me it being my drone, but I can categorically say it wasn't. Do we know who, where?
No.
No. I'll see if I can find out. I have sources in the drone world.
Well, we do know it wasn't Nanny McPhee, considering how the free kick went after drone break.
Got the panoramic view.
We were joking on Match Club that it was Nanny McPhee's drone.
He's measuring out the wall.
And he bought himself 9-10 minutes to prepare for that free kick. And I think we just gave Young the big up, and he was a bit slouchy, wasn't he, on that free kick?
Didn't he roll? Is that the one that tried to roll it through to Bailey, or they rolled it short to Bailey? Bailey passes it on and it all goes to shit. Yet later in the game, of course, we got a set piece. And what did we do? We just put the ball into an area.
Yeah. So you can't really give that one to Nanny McPhee, but...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
It was one of those where as long as you were still asking questions, you felt you would get it. But at the same time, Southampton had it in the net and you kind of thought, oh shit, we might have to be fighting for a draw here, because you felt we'd get a goal in this game. But talk me through it. It was the Ramsey one, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it came from Moreno's side, so that's the first sort of slight black mark against him.
Yeah, got absolutely cooked, didn't he, on the wing?
Yeah, the ball comes into the box, and at first glance, El Nussi has lightly nudged Jacob Ramsey in the back with his arm, and Ramsey's fell over. Ball goes out to Ward-Prowse, and it deflects off Konsa into the net. But luckily, on closer inspection, VAR, what has actually happened is El Nussi has just sort of trodden on Ramsey's Achilles down the back, as well as nudging him. So
a lot of people didn't pick that up at the time. When you saw the replay finally, you saw it, but everybody was talking about the nudge. You know, even on social media after, it was only later that the penny dropped. They didn't actually see him stand on the back of him on his Achilles.
Yeah, and on social media as well, people were saying, oh, wait until, you know, that's seen in Match of the Day later. I can't wait until they look at that later. And then, of course, Match of the Day, it was looked at later and go, everybody just went, yeah, correct decision. He stood in his Achilles. Yeah, no problem. So, yeah, it was one of those ones. It was at the time of the game, it felt a bit like a sucker punch because Villa were sort of like getting back into being on top. I mean, just previous to that, there was Martinez, a good, great save from Armstrong with his right foot.
It was a good save, that one.
You still felt that Villa were in the ascendancy. If anybody was going to score, it was going to be Villa. And then that did feel like a sucker punch whenever you thought it was going to be good.
It was almost a throwback. You felt like you're in a time machine going back a few months.
Yes.
Out of the Emery revolution, back to the dark medieval times of Villa throwing games away, having played reasonably decently.
And to be fair, you know, Southampton have had momentum of beating Man City and the Everton win the week before. They had a bit of a go, but I had in the back of my head, I was thinking, this might have a bit of a smash and grab written all over it. And in the end, it kind of, I wouldn't say smash and grab, because I think we deserve to actually win the game for the way we played over the whole 90 minutes. But you thought, we'll get a chance here, as you said. And I was kind of confident that when it came, we'd take it, because you could just see how the game was going at Southampton, and especially the fans. They were getting so frustrated with decisions not going their way, which were fouls. You could just tell it was one of those very emotional performances where it's kind of a bit blood and thunder and you're just losing your heads a little bit and just going in extra hard. And then they gave the free kick away and kind of lined up in a good position for Douglas Luiz, who whips a great ball in for Watkins.
Pretty rudimentary, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Good header, good goal. And I was really pleased for Watkins, because I actually thought, as much as he didn't have chances or anything, I thought he worked so hard in the game. And with the sort of narrative around Ings going, the pressure would have been on his shoulders a little bit. He'd obviously been injured before, and I think he's obviously had a little bit of criticism recently for not being particularly clinical. And I'm really pleased for him that he got the, well, what turned out to be the winner.
Going back to your prognosis of, had a slight feel of smash and grab. I agree with that, because the tone of this show is, it's kind of fairly blasé about, you know, we've turned the corner and we're a different team now. But there were some fine margins in that game. The decisions, as, you know, we're talking like centimetres, well, yeah, against Leeds as well. So we're not quite there where we're smoking cigars while we're controlling the game. It's just we're looking better, and let's say we're creating better look for ourselves because we're putting in the work. But it's not comfortable domination at the moment, for want of a better term. But the wind's in our direction, shall we say. But just going back to the referee decision, I thought pretty much all the decisions, even though there were kind of, there's a lot of fractional ones, I thought it was, all the decisions were pretty right on.
I'd agree with that. You know, we said a few times, didn't we, under Gerrard, that when you don't do the simple things, you aren't going to get those breaks. And when you get, you know, I think it was the West Ham game where we kind of pissed around a lot and we lost to a deflected goal. And when you get those little breaks, when you don't do simple things right, you aren't going to. But at the moment, I think Villa are, because they're showing good endeavour. They're trying to play the right way, and they're actually putting their bodies on the line and doing that sort of the dirty work, you know, compared to sort of, you know, the New Year's Day trip to Tottenham, where, you know, Olsen in goal that day barely had a thing to do. And that really was a bit of a walk in the park, very surprisingly. I think Southampton and the Leeds game were real hard-fought victories. But for me, that's a big green flag that actually they can win like that, because that's something we haven't been doing enough of in the last couple of years.
Phil, decisions, whingy Saints fans.
Yeah, I think the decisions in this one, they were all correct. I mean, Villa have been on the wrong end of plenty of decisions to know whenever it's one of these, and it's like, oh, on another day that could have went a different way. But luckily in this one, the decisions were all correct. But what I would say is, if Olsen had been in nets in this game, I don't think Villa would have won it, because Martinez had a great game, whether it was sweeping it out from long balls coming in, or the two saves that he made, especially the last one, because that was a carbon copy of the goal that Saudi Arabia scored against him when he was for Argentina in the World Cup. Exactly same point in the box and same top corner.
He did well with his feet. I remember, I'm not Danny Murphy's biggest fan. It was, I think their analysis of his work with his feet was really good. He had obviously made the save from Armstrong, played out from the back really well. You can just tell everybody in front of him is a lot more confident when he's there compared to Olsen.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen and stuff, he doesn't shut up during the game. He's probably the best communicator on the pitch.
Yeah, him and Mings, for sure. Right, so a little bit more Villa chat later on, but now it's time for Media Muppets. Right, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week, Mr. Shaw?
Oh, it's former Blue Nose Baroness Karen Brady writing in the Sun. What a duo that is already, to have Karen Brady and something from the Sun. So you're in Muppet territory.
Blue Nose Baroness. So I like that title.
Yeah. She's showing a bit of hypocrisy talking on the subject of parachute payments. Now, with West Ham in their relegation zone before the weekend, I wonder why the subject of parachute payments would be so close to her heart. She actually writes, this is her words from the piece there, there's a demand parachute payments are drastically cut, but these calls are from people who do not understand football finance. I mean, there's a bit of condescending to everyone that says the demand should be cut. This is West Ham with their £120,000 a week reserve keeper, Areola, on the bench.
Not to mention their taxpayers-funded stadium.
Oh, we'll get on to that. She also just throws a bit of casual xenophobia in it for good measure as well. She goes, some of us, well, the English of us, have concerns about the increase of foreign players and managers irresistibly tempted by the Premier League. I mean, I don't think we need to go down the list of West Ham signings to say that they haven't all been just, you know, from the local London area. So I don't think she has much of a leg to stand on there. She says, if you cannot count on parachute payments, you cannot take on new players' contacts in the Premier League, which means you will not only be uncompetitive and likely relegated, you will contribute nothing to the competitive of the division. Well, to that I would argue, well, hello Brentford and Brighton, they managed to buy their own stadiums as well, and they didn't get a taxpayer's gift, and they're, you know, two examples of you buy low, you sell high, and you run an effective business.
Top half at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, the most hypocrisy thing about this is whenever you think back to Villa's first season, they were promoted just before Villa's very first game back in the Premier League in 2019. I remember Brady put another piece out saying that Villa's spending was reckless and it wasn't the way to compete in the Premier League, that Norwich's spending model was the one to go for. And she said they would finish higher than Villa. So times change when you're down near the bottom of the league. Everything goes out the window.
This is a person who decided it was a good idea many years ago to employ Barry Fry, though.
Let's not bring old Bazza into the scenario. I've got a question for you. I'd love West Ham to go down, mainly for her and the others. But Villa would be 3 million lighter because they wouldn't get that 3 million bonus off the Danny Ings deal. So that's the question. Would you rather West Ham go down and wave goodbye to that 3 million and, you know, take it on the chin, or them to stay up and Villa to be
places higher in the league?
No, this is all about the 3 mil. Is it worth West Ham to go down for 3 million is essentially the essence of the question.
I say yes, most definitely, because West Ham are one of those teams that if they got their act together with that taxpayer stadium that all of us are paying for, that they have a good, you know, project, if you want to use that term. Somebody could turn them around.
And we haven't done great against them in recent times either.
No.
No.
So it's worth them getting relegated for 3 million. Are we all agreeing on that?
Yeah, sorry, Danny.
Get them relegated for Anna Gustafsson or something like that. Yeah, 3 million, no problem.
Right, I'm glad we sorted that one out. So Danny Ings will now forever be wrote about as the 12 million transfer and not the 15 million transfer.
He will be eternally called the parachute payment.
Any media nuggets for us, Mr. Shaw?
Just a small one from L'Equipe, which is turning into a source of information.
The only paper I read nowadays.
They're great.
You may have noticed that there was an exhibition match between Lionel Messi's Paris Saint-Germain and Cristiano Ronaldo's Riyadh All-Stars.
Where did this game take place? I wonder where.
Oh, I wonder. But there was just one tidbit that L'Equipe took out of it. The fee for PSG to appear in this was actually called a compensation fee, was 10 million euros. To appear in this match, but of course that'll go straight into their FFP calculation, considering the same paper reported that they made a record net loss of 369 million euros last season.
Let's move on to the 3 points. We'll quickly blast through those. The Deloitte Money League has been published again, with Aston Villa coming in 21st again. The yearly report looks at the amount of revenue generated by the world's top football clubs. Last year, I think we had it on the show, didn't we, where they made the top 20, yep. But then AC Milan asked for a recount, which knocked Villa out. We're getting to the point where all the Premier League clubs will take the places eventually, and Real Madrid are second, aren't they, in this? But you've got Newcastle getting in there. They're above Villa, and they'll stay in that top 20 for a long time, I'm sure.
Liverpool, for the first time ever in it, earned more than Manchester United in revenue, which was down to them getting to the Champions League final. That was worked out at about just over 100 million for getting to the Champions League final. So that's how much revenue that brings in.
I mean, in a nutshell, the financial superiority is it's just lit. That top 20 is littered with Premier League clubs, and Manchester City were top with 619 million. I think that's the first time they've been top. In comparison, Villa have generated 185.1 million, slightly up from the previous season by 3-4 million. But, you know, less than a third of what Manchester City have generated.
Shows where the gap is, which we've spoken about before.
Yeah, point number two, the old lady in Italy back.
Again, in trouble.
Dubious issues again. Juventus have been docked 15 points following an investigation into the club's past transfer dealings. Is this when they were banned before? They've been accused of fixing their balance sheets. I mean, I think every club does this to a certain extent, by artificial gains from club transfers. Juventus had been in third place, but the penalty will drop them to 10th.
See you later, Champions League money.
Yeah, club board of directors resigned back in November. Juventus have denied any wrongdoing and will appeal. The actual sanction of 15 points is actually tougher than the 9-point deduction prosecutors had requested. But I think this is because of previous... Yeah, it's because of previous, you know, you can't just keep being sordid operators and expect to get away with it and not to be shut down. Anyway, point number three, the white card has been used. You know the red card, you know the yellow card, but the white card has been used for the first time in Portugal. Sporting Lisbon and Benfica's women teams were both shown a white card during their fierce derby match after a new rule in Portugal was introduced. Tell me, Phil Shaw, what the hell is a white card?
Muster, because you're already, I'm already tainted by what I think of it. The white card has been introduced for fair play. It's a new initiative that they're bringing in along with concussion substitutes and the longer injury time that you saw in the World Cup. So they just sort of like threw all these sort of like new things out and see which one sort of works and which one sticks. But I can't see it working.
What's the advantage of getting one?
There is no advantage other than the acclaim of your peers, I would say, because there's a video going around of this one that was both medical teams ran onto the field after a player fell ill, leading to the referee showing both medical teams a white card and the crowd started clapping. That's basically it.
So, I mean, it'd be more interesting if, I don't think Martinez would be getting many white cards, but it would be good if it would cancel out an existing yellow card during the game.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of reward for all this fair play. It can't just be, you know, like to get the fair play award.
It's like virtue signaling. A white card for virtue signalling or something.
I get the idea of like what a white card, why they're doing it, but the card system's meant to be like a sanction or a punishment. If you're going to like reward a team, why not sanction a team for something that they do collectively, like time wasting? You say, right, your team has a white card, and maybe, I don't know, you can have five through the first half of the season, or through a season, and if you get to a certain threshold, then you have to, I don't know, then you start losing points.
Thank you, Martinez, for rushing to take that goal kick when you're only 1-0 up. Here's a white card for that. Sounds pointless to me. But yeah, as you said, cards have, it's punishment and that is meant to encourage better play. Right, any other Villa business? Jahan Duran. Phil Shaw wrote a little getting to know him type of article on the website. Somebody replied, I don't know if you saw this, Phil. He said, can you tell me if he's... is it kind of a Wesley-type player, as in raw potential talent? Would you see him as a similar kind of acquisition?
Now, having just, like most Villa fans will, have not scouted him for years and have watched a few videos of him, I'd say there's a bit more, sort of like, what would you say? He's a bit more lively than Wesley would have been.
I refer to him like a Tone. He's more like that.
I think he's got more of an edge, more speed to him. Because you thought Wesley was a bit, despite being a big, strapping chap, he hit the deck and he played dead, and he didn't have that edge to him, did he? That kind of fire.
He wasn't a dominating player at all, which he sort of had the attributes for, but
you know, potentially Samatta might be a bit closer, but I'm hoping he's not.
No, I'm not going with Samatta. I think he's going to be better than us. I'll stick my neck on the line and say if Villa are, like I wrote in it, Villa aren't the team that's going to drop 18 million on somebody and then let them learn their trade in the under-23s. He's going to be on the bench and he's going to be coming onto the pitch. Yeah. So for good or for bad, he's going to be in the first team squad when you're spending that much money.
I'm sort of hoping he's in the sort of realms of Keenan Davis with some finishing ability.
I'm hoping Benteke, but then hope springs eternal.
Benteke, don't we?
I think he's more getting on the end of stuff rather than back to goal, as in Davis would do, and help building up play.
But he's definitely a nine, isn't he? He's not a winger. He's a straight down the middle type of guy.
But yeah, we shall see. I think getting him did enable the Ings move. I mean, there's a few factors. If he didn't come in, if Villa was still in the FA Cup, if Ings was probably a year younger, I don't think the Ings move happens. You can read that in exactly what Emery said in that press conference when he said, you know, the first thing he said, we're out both of the cups. We're not really in threat of relegation. So it's basically saying this is a dead season. So this is a financially, it works, this deal. So since we haven't actually got anything to gain from a football perspective as a team this season, it did irk me a little bit, because I thought they would still be, you're looking at the table now and you're thinking, ooh, hang on a minute.
Gunning for seventh. And you just look at some of the teams who are still above us. You know, I've said it a few times now, you know, Brentford, Fulham, Brighton. Come May, you do not want to be beneath them.
And you're thinking, but realistically, you think we could crack the top six here because we're only 3 points off it at the moment. So would you rather have Ings in your matchday squad trying to crack the top six? Yes, I fucking would. That's the bit where that irks me a little bit, unless you've got another something up your sleeve.
Which I think they have. I've said it a few times.
And they'd have to be pretty good as well, because Ings, if you give him game time, he will come up with a decent quota of goals.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the players that we've already mentioned in the show that are out, Coens, they're basically your bench fodder. You're going to need players in, so I think we can expect some more players in this window.
But that's the only thing that's interesting here is, I get it, we're at the Cups. I get that Ings is age. I get he's got 1 year left on his contract at the end of the season. But hang on a minute, there's actually still, if you want to be ambitious, if you want to be ambitious based on form under Emery and the kind of caliber of teams we've played, which is, it's easy 8 out of 10 average, isn't it? If you look at those seven games Emery's had in the league. So you would say, well, if he kept this going, there's no reason why we shouldn't be knocking on the door when it comes to the European places at the end of the season. Now, if you believe in that, then you're thinking, well, we need Ings, because one injury to Watkins and then suddenly the whole thing changes.
Mm.
So that's Emery.
They've got to have irons in the fire.
Because Emery did say, oh, we're out both of the Cups, alluding it's a dead season to a certain extent. I think, they're thinking, well, we're going to finish top half here with Emery. And that'll be enough. It'll appease the fans ultimately. First top half finish for, over a decade. But I'm looking at this table and I'm chomping at the bit to play Leicester, because I'm seeing Chelsea 1 point above us. I'm seeing Liverpool. I'm seeing Spurs, like, let's say, the most realistic, the highest up that we could probably claw down. And I'm thinking, let's just stamp on all their heads.
Yep. I've said a few times, we've got Brighton and Fulham to come to Villa Park.
Yeah. Win those, both of those games, and you level on points as we stand now. Yep. I don't think we're going to catch United, Newcastle, Manchester City, Arsenal. So I'm not that deluded and deranged, but...
The rest are there to be shot at.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more chance of us getting in the top six, I would say, at the moment, than there was us getting out of the relegation zone with four games to play at the first season we came up.
Yeah.
In terms of odds, definitely.
If you're out of the Cups, you want to keep the season alive. Even if you don't end up achieving like a European place or whatever, the fans, it means you go into next season with like momentum, which we haven't had the last two sort of summers. This after the season where we were top six under Smith and tailed off massively. And then the Gerrard one, it's like, I think if actually people go, wow, we are really cooking here.
Yeah, but actually we are at the moment already. So I think this season isn't dead yet. This is the whole point about the Danny Ings thing. I mean, this season is not dead. The season is only dead when mathematically you can't get into Europe or you're out the Cups, or unless you're battling for relegation or obviously the league or the top four places. So there is something to play for here, because if you were a neutral now and you're looking at the league table and you go, right, okay, so these are the teams that will be involved in the relegation battle. These are the teams that will be involved in top four. These are the teams, Europa League, and you would have to include Villa in the Europa League mix as we stand at this point.
Yep. Yeah, we might be bottom of the mix, but we are in the mix.
Well, we're only one couple of weeks from complete transformation, like really in the mix. At the moment, as people have said on social media, people, the mainstream media, and when I say that, I mean, like Sky or whatever, when they refer to Villa, they say, oh, and Villa 11 points off the relegation zone. So it's, we're a couple of weeks away from, a couple of rounds of games, shall we say, from spinning the narrative to a team that's actually chasing Europe, as we will be mentioned in Match of the Day and Sky Sports, etc. So I don't know, this Danny Ings thing, I think we will know at the end of the transfer window.
I'm hoping, by the time we play Leicester, we kind of go, oh, wow, they've played a blinder here in the last 2 weeks. We're in a better shape. That was a good move. That's what you want to say.
Yeah, because at the moment we're weaker than we were, is what I would conclude.
Yeah. That bench against Southampton, I would probably say it's probably the weakest bench we've had all season. When you've got to play two goalkeepers and two kids who've barely had a kit, you've basically got four guys who you have no intention of bringing off the bench.
Yes.
Yeah, people saying that, oh, Bailey can do a job up front. No, he can't. That's not what we're looking. Bailey's a wide forward, if you're going to split errors there.
Yeah, we're talking about chasing that top six, and we're only 3 points off it at the moment. So this isn't delusion. This is, you've got rid of one of the, let's say, a good match day squad player, And you do need to get somebody in because, you know, you're not playing the ambition game if that's how it's going to end up. So anyway, we will see. The proof will be in what happened up until the end of January. Right, so I think we should leave it there. Unfortunately, the Ings discussion has taken us through the Emery clipboard time, which will return in next week's show.
I have no problem staying undefeated in 2023. It's fine.
Are you undefeated in 2023? Wow.
Phil's on the march, just like the Villa.
Right, please do follow the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at MyOrManSaid, where we keep you in touch with all kinds of things. And if you are listening on Apple or Spotify, do follow the show as well to get updates. In fact, whatever podcast app you use, you should be following the show just to be the first notified when a new show drops. Right, it's a weekend off now. We will be doing a show though, so don't worry about that. There seems to be lots of things bubbling in terms of the transfers. I would like to see us get somebody in for Rings, but as Emery says, only if he improves the matchday squad. But yeah, hopefully they've got a card to play in that respect. Until we find out if they actually play that card, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport, powered by fans.